are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, September 28th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Nelson Dennis, author of The War Against Puerto Rico, on the law that's been strangling Puerto Rico. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court, with Gorsuch seated, will revisit killing public sector unions. Republican tax plan drops, and it looks exactly like a Republican tax plan would. Lindsey Graham admits he had no clue as to what he was doing. And Trump announces he will allow insurance companies to sell across state lines, parenthetically, which they can already do but don't want to do anyways. And will Republicans allow 9 million kids to lose health care? They've got 48 hours to decide. Dems flip more state house seats. And everyone is asking, is Jared Kushner a woman? Meanwhile, FBI has 1,000 open investigations into white supremacy terror groups. Iraqi Kurds vote for independence. Tom Price, Scott Pruitt, living large, getting while the getting is good. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Matt, would you turn down the air conditioning in the central headquarters from the control room, please? Thank you. Gets a little chilly in here, folks. And as you know, we have air conditioning controls for each separate floor in Majority Report headquarters. So we're able to put the air conditioning down here while, let's say, in the commissary, for instance, it is perfectly cool. Also wanted to headline this, and this is not a huge surprise based upon the actions of the Trump administration thus far, but it was announced or I should say reported by the Washington Post, which found a report, a U.S. government report, that the United States plans to accept a maximum of 45,000 refugees in the coming fiscal year. That starts in just a matter of days. It is the lowest cap in decades, and obviously one that was quickly condemned by human rights groups. As we have a lot of reasons around the world for refugees, ranging from the ongoing civil war in Syria to the incredible amounts of violence that we're seeing in Central America, not to mention the extreme weather situations we've had in Latin America and obviously in the Caribbean. And we got a call, I guess it was maybe a couple of months ago now, from someone who worked in an agency that helps refugees acclimate, I guess, and assimilate into our society. I mean, one of the things that's very difficult for refugees in particular is that they, unlike other immigrants to this country, probably don't have family here. because they're leaving their country because of an emergency. So they're less likely to have family. In many instances, they're less likely to have communities where they can, which can help them assimilate. It's not true across the board, but. And one of the difficult things is for them to get work. And I raise this because my cousin, who lives in Rhode Island, reached out to me, a couple months ago. And he said, you know, I've been trying to figure out, like, what I can do just to say F you to Donald Trump without having to keep saying that on Twitter. And that feeling like it was not effective. And so he's working with an organization. It's a 501(c) in Providence, Rhode Island. I believe it's in Providence. And basically what it is, I mean, it's a fairly simple idea. It's a granola company. And their strategy as a social venture is this. We target those refugees who are least equipped to enter the job market quickly. We ask the local agency to screen for us and choose those refugees who they believe are the least likely to get a job within the next year. If we can speed up work entry, it only makes it a profound difference financially, but improves all areas of life, including mental health, family stability, and physical health. So they hire almost exclusively refugees. We also target very high-skilled refugees for sales positions who might have the ability to start their own businesses eventually. Along the way, we're trying to develop a replicable model for promoting refugee employment that we hope will serve resettlement communities and promote deeper integration and engagement of everyday Americans. So they have they sell granola. It's pretty exceptional. Matt, you want to weigh in on this?
Well, yeah, I didn't know about that refugee angle of it. You just gave it to me as a granola bar. And
did I not say what it was?
No, I didn't. I had no idea. And I thought it was really tasty even without knowing all that stuff.
And it doesn't impact the taste, but it makes you feel good about
it. I think it makes it, retroactively, it tastes even better than I thought it did.
And they got granola bars. They got granola. They have some nuts, I think, and stuff like that. But they are a 501(c). It is beautifuldayri.org. Beautifuldayri for Rhode Island.org. Check it out. If you're one of those people, I got to be honest with you. We have both bags in the house. They're almost completely gone now. It's been 2 days.
I might try to subsist on them, actually.
And it's a real problem for me because I have no control when it comes to stuff like this. So this is it. Beautifuldayri.org. Check it out. This is not a paid advertisement. It's just it's a great thing that they're doing over there. You can support them. And then maybe, I also imagine, you know, they will talk to you about if it's something that you want to set up in your community. I don't know, talk to them, reach out to them. You know, it's going to take all sorts of different different efforts to get through this really horrible period of our country's history. I mean, presuming that we're going to. Just briefly, and we're going to talk more about this later in the program. The Republican tax plan has been released. And what is fascinating about the incredible incompetence of the Trump administration? I mean, look, Republicans are going to be Republicans. They're trying to get rid of the estate tax, and we will have debates on this, and libertarian sniping online. Well, I'm not going to get into that right now. I almost trying to maintain some discipline myself. So the Trump administration, horribly incompetent. Republicans offer a classic Republican tax bill. We're going to cut taxes dramatically for the wealthy in a myriad of different ways. We're going to take tax plans that are identical to ones, let's say, in a place like Kansas, which have failed miserably with their premise that it would create growth. And put aside the notion of whether or not, you think growth is good or bad or whatnot. The whole theory of this supply-side economics, this trickle-down theory, has been debunked over and over again. And Republicans seem to be aware that this cuts against a mood in the country, which is we shouldn't give tax breaks to the elite in this country. Somehow, the Trump administration has not gotten this message. And you had Steve Mnuchin on the other day with Jake Tapper saying, like, that time where I said we're not going to raise taxes on middle class, that was not a promise. That was not a pledge.
The Mnuchin rule.
It was the Mnuchin rule. I got Mnuched. Well, apparently, you can also get Gary Cohn'd by this, too. Here is George Stephanopoulos, almost like incredulous that Cohn is getting on here, and they're talking about cutting $1.5 trillion worth of taxes, and Gary Cohn can't even say that middle-class people won't pay more.
If I'm hearing you correctly, you can't guarantee that no middle-class family will get a tax increase. There will be middle-class families who get a tax increase under your plan, correct?
George, there's an exception to every rule.
So that's a yes.
So look, I can't guarantee anything. You can always find a unique family somewhere. What our job here and what we've been working on in the White House is to create an economic stimulus package by using taxes to drive the economy of the United States. And that's what the president has ordered us to do, and that's what we're doing.
You folks, you're unique. Congratulations. Your taxes are going up to pay for my tax cuts. Yeah, I mean, anything's possible. The moon could fall into Lake Michigan. Who knows? But there it is, the Trump administration. Matt and I were trying to figure out, like, what could be the strategy here? Like, maybe they're trying to manage expectations so they can come out and say, "Kink, guess the good news is we're not raising middle-class taxes. We're just going to cut wealthy people's taxes."
Yeah, they could just come out and say only middle class and people pay, the lowest class people are going to pay more, and rich people are going to get a tax cut. So when it's actually everyone gets a tax cut, people are happy.
Or when not everybody is going to be paying more, right? So they just, like, you know, we put it out there. Maybe there's a chance you're going to have to pay more in taxes, but now
you're welcome.
And now you're welcome. And I should note, just as my classic disclaimer, I don't think that we need tax cuts. But maybe there could be some relief for on certain sales taxes, perhaps, or for specific targets. But broadly speaking, I think we need to raise taxes, particularly on the wealthy. Significantly on the wealthy. And I think we should increase the estate tax, not get rid of it. Significantly. But we will get into that later. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll be talking to Nelson Dennis. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program Nelson A. Dennis. He is a former New York State Assemblyman. He is the author of War Against All Puerto Ricans, Revolution and Terror in America's Colony, and writing in the New York Times opinion piece just yesterday, I guess it was, the law strangling Puerto Rico. And Nelson, that law has, as of this morning, been waived, at least temporarily, by the Trump administration.
Yeah, there's an irony to this. The law was promulgated in 1920. It's Section 27 of the Merchant Marine Act of 1920. It's otherwise known as the Jones Act, and was originally to protect shipping lanes and the coastal areas and boats from German U-2 boats. That was the original legislative intent. And you fast forward 98 years. It took 98 years to revisit this law, which at this point, all it's really doing is strangling the Puerto Rican economy. It literally took a hurricane and very quick editorial pressure to bring attention to this law.
So now my understanding is the law also was a part of the function of the law was to protect the American maritime industry. And with the because there was concern that if we needed to ramp up to have this capacity to build ships and whatnot, that we would want an American industry so that we wouldn't have to rely on others. The industry has sort of withered to a certain extent. But all of this, despite any and certainly some unions, I think, still support this law because it provides jobs. But no matter how you slice it, what's happening to Puerto Rico under this law, it appears to me to not be necessary to have Puerto Rico in this. We have Virgin Islands are not subject to this law. Am I right?
Yeah, there's three territories, Virgin Islands, Guam, and I believe Samoa are exempt from the Jones Act. Let me take out very quickly, the way it applies to Puerto Rico is that Puerto Rico is an island. It has to import virtually everything, including oil, which runs its entire electrical grid. And Puerto Rico is in a blackout right now, so this is critical. It imports 85% of its food, clothing, automobiles, all of it under the auspices of the Jones Act. And the way that works is that any foreign registry vessel that attempts to go to Puerto Rico, it can only do it in one of two ways. If it goes directly to Puerto Rico, it is subject to fees, taxes, duties, quota restrictions. All these costs are factored into the product, and the net result is it ends up costing about 20% more. Everything, no matter if it's medicine from Canada, oil from Venezuela, a car from Germany, anything. The option is it can go to Jacksonville, Florida, specifically Jacksonville, where it gets offloaded off the original foreign registry vessel, reloaded onto an American boat, and then it reroutes to Puerto Rico. And that's the equivalent of digging a ditch to fill it up again. There's no reason other than that, other than, it, as you said, it creates jobs in Jacksonville, and again, it ramps up the price of the product. Then the final result of this is that it allows U.S. consumer goods companies to ramp up their costs, their price in Puerto Rico. And Puerto Ricans are very price sensitive. Their per capita income is about $17,000, which is less than half that of Mississippi, the poorest state in the union. So they're very price sensitive. So if Puerto Ricans can save a little bit on some product, they will. So U.S. corporations just slightly underbid the foreign goods with the price protection that's provided from the Jones Act. And it creates this tremendous captive market in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is the fifth largest market in the world for goods, and there's more Walgreens and Walmarts per square mile in Puerto Rico than anywhere else on the planet. And all these goods are being sold at hyperinflated prices due to the Jones Act.
I want to reiterate that I was just blown away by that. The fifth largest market in the world for American products?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, and it's not a huge population. It's 3.5 million people,
right.
And they're poor, and it's the fifth largest market.
And I mean, you know, when you look at those numbers, and this is, you know, I mean, I think this is the larger story that you tell in your book, and people can go back and listen to our interview when we talked about your book specifically. But when you hear those numbers, it really has the feeling of. You get the sense of colonialism that's involved in this. And instead of like extracting, and we still very well may, resources from Puerto Rico, we're extracting Or I should say, you know, we're extracting sort of like final end resource. It's not even natural resource. It's just a full extraction of wealth out of that country, that the island, I should say. It's the United States territory, I guess.
Yeah, and you know what? You actually covered, there's a real insight in there, Sam, that there's been an evolution. It's been a one-sided relationship, and there's been a red carpet stretching from San Juan to Wall Street for over 100 years. From the beginning, it was perceived Puerto Rico, as the advantage of it was to be a naval coaling station. It had geopolitical value back in the turn of the century, in 1898. They quickly saw, though, that there was an agricultural benefit in Puerto Rico. And an interesting context is here: an even larger hurricane occurred in '99 called Huracán San Ciriaco. San Ciriaco really leveled the island, and the American response in the following year was to devalue the currency of Puerto Rico by 40%. So it was a sort of a Naomi Klein shock doctrine response, and the that evolution has continued. It went from a naval coaling station to an agricultural economy, a one-crop cash cow economy, that of sugar. And they were able to, the United States was able to dominate, own 80% of the arable land in Puerto Rico. That price devaluation, the monetary devaluation, helped them do it. Then from an agricultural economy, it became a corporate tax haven, whereby corporations get a 20-year tax abatement on all interest and capital gains income. And then most recently, it's become a municipal bond target and a consumer goods market. And so it's gone through all these evolutionary relations with the United States, but all of them one-sided, where it always benefits the United States.
And we should remind people that even with all this said, in Puerto Rico, you can't vote for the president. How does that... I didn't realize that you can vote in primaries, but how do you vote? I don't understand. I mean, if I'm living in Puerto Rico and I move to Florida, I can vote in Florida. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, that derives from the relationship from the beginning, from 1898, from the Spanish-American War onward. Puerto Rico has been an occupied territory. It has been a territorial possession, and those are key words. They're so key that they were upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court last year in the U.S. United States versus Sanchez Valle decision. There were two Supreme Court cases, both of which upheld last year that Puerto Rico was not a commonwealth or any. They stripped down to the language that under the meaning of the territorial and the supremacy clauses of the U.S. Constitution, Puerto Rico is a possession, and that's synonymous with a colony. And as a possession, the U.S. Congress has plenary jurisdiction over any law in Puerto Rico. They can veto anything that Puerto Rican legislature comes up with, including most recently, and this was the controversy last year that rose to the Supreme Court, the attempt to give Puerto Rico Chapter 9 bankruptcy powers. It doesn't have it. Puerto Rico can't create its own legislation, and if it does, and if it conflicts with U.S. legislation, it'll always be struck down. So it's sort of it's a very qualified citizenship, whereby we don't get the real privileges and immunities of the U.S. Constitution, and yet we're subject to U.S. law. We can get drafted, and we're subject to things like the Jones Act, which are almost it's surrealistic. U.S. taxpayer doesn't realize. They think that Puerto Ricans are getting tax preferences, that they don't pay full income taxes, and that they're basically getting over. And it's not the case. It's the exact opposite. Puerto Rico has been sustaining the U.S. economy since the inception. And one of the principal ways, Sam, is this Jones Act. It's costing Puerto Rico between $3 and $6 billion a year, that Jones Act alone. If it weren't for that one law, we would have paid the public debt of $73 billion. We would have paid it 3 or 4 times over. That gives you an idea of the power of the U.S. Congress over Puerto Rico.
Just go walk through that. I mean, explain it. I mean, because you've got just everything is so expensive that it sort of traps the economy in some way, right? I mean, and this is why you've had such a large exodus of people from Puerto Rico over the past, I guess, decade. I mean, just explain where. You have to, as a consumer, you're paying 13% more in terms of your cost of living. Something like I saw some thing that said, you know, food itself costs almost twice what it costs in Florida. So this is just basic, and then this money is extracted by U.S. corporations, I guess, and none of it stays in Puerto Rico. So the economy, the economy there is just drained of money that could go towards infrastructure payments and whatnot.
Yeah, and so what happens, unfortunately, Puerto Rico and President Trump sort of touched on this. He mentioned the fact that Puerto Rico is 1,500 miles away and you can't just drive trucks over there. And he's right. But that 1,500 miles has also created 1,500 miles of misunderstanding. And in all fairness to the rest of the American public, there's no reason why they should understand the minutiae of the Jones Act. It doesn't. It's not part of the fabric of their daily life. And so that's a big problem. That what you hear what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. What happens in Puerto Rico never happens at all. The only reason we have some meaningful attention to the Jones Act is because of the hurricane. And yet this law has been on the books for the last 98 years. And you're right. It absolutely drains the Puerto Rican economy, and it prevents Puerto Rico from having a private sector. The island is specifically prohibited from developing its own shipping industry, which is a fundamental aspect of an island.
Right.
You mean you have to import and export. Well, Puerto Rico can't set its own international pricing structure. It's completely subject to the whatever price rigging is created by the U.S. corporations. And in the end, it becomes a class thing. It's not really, it's not as if it's Puerto Rico versus the United States or the people in Puerto Rico. It's a class situation because there are a very small segment of rich people in Wall Street, in San Juan, Puerto Ricans included, that are creating these financial instruments, these municipal bond products, and that are benefiting from the Jones Act at the expense of not only Puerto Ricans, but the U.S. taxpayer. Because they're the ones that are paying taxes that go in as transfer payments into Puerto Rico, but the Puerto Ricans don't benefit because their per capita income is only $17,000, and whatever money they're getting with any tax purposes is going from one pocket out the other to the corporations.
Right.
When the same car costs $6,000 more in San Juan than it does in Miami, Sam, someone is getting over. And it's not the Puerto Ricans.
All right. So let me ask you this. And it seems as of today, and we're 7 days out, at least from the destruction that Miriam wrought on Puerto Rico, that the administration is like starting to engage, right? I mean, they finally, mm-hmm. after saying, well, we can't waive the Jones Act. They're finally doing it. There seems to be the military now seems to be ramping up more. What I mean, and we saw the response. I mean, the Trump administration, I think, is not terribly competent across all fields. But we saw a fairly, I thought, competent response to what was going on in Houston. We saw a fairly competent response to what was going on in Florida in terms of Irma. What accounts for this? I mean, in your sense, I mean, what is it? Why has Donald Trump been so, I don't know, I guess, hands off, arm's length to what's going on in Puerto Rico?
Well, there's layers in that question. One is Citizens United. And there's, as you can, anyone can fathom it with between the benefits of the Jones Act to the Carrier Act companies that have a virtual shipping monopoly, and the unions that are benefiting in Jacksonville, Florida, from being the exclusive area rather than in Puerto Rico, which is where you would expect these jobs to happen, and the consumer goods companies and the automobile companies. When you have all that concentrated knot of opposition, and under the umbrella of Citizens United, there can be lobbying in Washington and lobbying the White House. You can see all sorts of cross currents and all sorts of pressure that can be brought to bear on this, and that's what's happened in the past. And it literally took a hurricane to forgive this metaful, but to blow all that away and to strip this law, what it's doing, down to its essence, and then finally say, well, you know, we just can't keep doing this. We're in a humanitarian crisis, and it is just too much. on top of this, to be price gouging an entire island. So there is, that was one reason why I would say that Trump didn't rush to do it, but now he had to. And another one, Sam, is he has to pander to his electoral base. He's trying to build a wall. He's deporting people. He basically ran on Ann Coulter's book, Adios America. That was practically his entire campaign platform. So he's sort of trapped by his own syntax that he's created for himself. I don't think that he wants to be seen as being too Latino friendly in Puerto Rico. And that's unfortunate, to be playing politics during a deeply human crisis. But I think part of that is entering into this. And hopefully he'll get past that, especially when he goes down to Puerto Rico and sees firsthand the devastation. Hopefully a human side will kick in to our president.
I'm not going to hold my breath. My understanding is that the administration has also basically made it, has more or less barred any other lawmakers from this country heading down to Puerto Rico, barred them from any U.S. government transportation, military or otherwise. Do you know anything about that?
You know, Sam, I hear of it. I'm not surprised. I didn't know about that. I did not know. Are you saying that Trump specifically enunciated a ban on elected officials going down to the island?
A Washington Post report last night, the Trump administration restricting lawmakers in both parties from visiting Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands aboard military aircraft this weekend in order to keep focused on recovery missions there, supposedly. This is according to congressional aides.
That doesn't make sense, because a congressman doesn't take up much space.
No, exactly.
No much more than a press attaché for Donald Trump.
Apparently, any of the some people have been able to go aboard U.S. Coast Guard aircraft, there was a delegation that went down Friday. But lawmakers in Washington are
being prevented. Really dysfunctional, because if he's going down on an alleged fact-finding mission of his own, and at a time like this, a primary aim is to just figure out and see what's going on and get eyes on the ground, and get responsible people and people in positions of authority to see what's happening, he's essentially almost imposing a blackout on decision makers.
Alleged is doing a lot of work going down there for an alleged fact-finding mission. All right. Well, let me ask you this. I think, you know, to a certain extent, you know, the military response we've seen here has been anemic relative to what we've seen in other catastrophes. It seems to maybe be ramping up now. But what do you think happens going forward? I mean, we have a situation where Puerto Rico has lost, I think, and you'd know this number better than I, but I believe somewhere like 8% of its population in just the past 5 or 10 years. And there's every reason to believe that you're going to see another migration following the devastation from Miriam, and this is going to make it that much harder for the island to, you know, not literally, but literally, I guess, and figuratively, dig itself out of its situation down there.
Yeah, the figures are high. It's been about 1 million people that have left, leaving, so the island, and it has about a population of about 3.4 million.
Wow.
So it's really high, and some key people they estimate that a doctor a day is having to, unfortunately, to abandon. So some key educated individuals that aren't able to function in the local job market, because they've been closing schools and hospitals and shutting down the public infrastructure. And a fear that I and many people have is that Puerto Rico will become after this Hurricane Maria, an intensified target for what they call P3s, public-private partnerships, but which I call P5s, public-private partnerships for the plunder of Puerto Rico.
Right.
Because to the extent that there is now with the Financial Control Board, the PROMESA legislation, a a dilatory administration, which has to be dragged into providing some meaningful help during a tragic time, well, then this urgency will factor very neatly into the hands of people who will say, well, you know, you are manifestly incapable of running your own and redeveloping your own infrastructure. So fine, we'll come in, we'll invest the capital. Right, for instance, right now, Goldman Sachs is a co-partner in PR5 and PR22, which are the two most profitable highways in Puerto Rico. And they have a 35-year lease, and it's projected that they will make upwards of $3 billion. They'll net $3 billion in profits over those 35 years. We're talking big money, and it's very appealing. And so this is unfortunately, a sort of Naomi Klein shock doctrine. It's hopefully Puerto Rico does not become a target for predatory capitalism. And a lot of that, the banquet table will be set by the Trump administration. The types of preferences, waivers, thankfully, they acted appropriately with respect to the Jones Act. And if we can continue in that direction and allow Puerto Rico to develop its own economy, have an organic relationship to its own recovery, one that doesn't strip it of ownership of its own natural resources, so that Puerto Ricans don't have to mortgage their island in order to save it, then we may have something that we may call a country, something that I could call my Puerto Rico. Otherwise, it's just going to become one big privatized island, and it could happen very quickly. And I think we're going to get a good sense of that within the next 6 months to a year. We're going to see which way that's headed.
All right. So let me ask you this. The Jones Act has been waived for 1 year. And maybe it's a little bit early to contemplate this, but what can you imagine at this point would be strategies to make that permanent? A and B, what can be done to so that the two scenarios that you outlined are potential here? One, Puerto Rico just becoming more of a profit engine for U.S. corporations, as opposed to allowing the country to sort of organically and internally, I should say country, the island, to organically and internally build its own resources up. I mean, what's the strategy, broadly speaking, for those two goals?
Well, one thing could happen naturally, and another will require a real conscious effort. The natural part is that now if foreign vessels, now if say, for an example, Canadian pharmaceuticals or lower-priced oil products coming maybe from Venezuela or other sources, and trade relationships are developed over this year, then that's a natural outgrowth. If Puerto Rico and Puerto Ricans and small business people and entrepreneurs are able to establish for the first time in a century their own business relationships, their own buying and selling, their own pricing structure, and negotiate those international trade relations, that's a natural. It'll just be in place. So something that we don't have in a year will exist, which is these business mechanisms and these business relations that Puerto Ricans haven't had. So hopefully that'll just happen naturally, just through the process of supply and demand and contracting between Puerto Rican businessmen and the outside world. The more conscious element, I think, is to have really good. We're in an area, as you know, Sam, of fake news and a lot of spin, and we have to be constantly vigilant. We have to be as rigid as possible, and very hard-headed about it, and using some of our best economists in Puerto Rico as well to maintain good statistics, good clean information. So that we can see if there's been a tectonic shift over the next year. So when the time comes to revisit this, we can have some good hard data which show what differences, if any. And I think there'll be some very healthy figures. Some of those will be the actual unemployment figures. If 5 or 10,000 jobs are come into existence over the next year, and we can properly document that, right? If the cost of living starts going down. I'll give you one real simple one. I pay 9 cents per kilowatt hour for my electricity here in New York. If we look at our Con Ed bill, there's a little line there that shows exactly what it is per kilowatt hour, what we're paying. Puerto Ricans are paying about 25 cents per kilowatt hour. And a big reason is because of everything, the entire electrical grid runs on imported oil. So if a kilowatt hour, the cost goes down over this year, and if employment figures go up, and if the cost of a car is no longer $6,000 more, now suddenly we have some hard facts that we can present to Congress. So I would say that's the second element, to have a really good, clean, clear set of figures that we can present to the U.S. Congress. I think those will go a long way.
Nelson Dennis, author of The War Against All Puerto Ricans, Revolution and Terror in America's Colony. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
I do too, Sam. Talk again.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. There it is. And good news that the Jones Act has been, at least for a year, waived in its application in Puerto Rico. It really is, and it's a fascinating book. You should check it out. It really is amazing just how we have extracted. And over the years, what we have extracted from Puerto Rico has changed. But it's like the giving tree.
I bet the Goldman Sachs highways are fun to drive on.
Yes. It's just unbelievable when you contemplate that. Making billions of dollars off these highways, which is obviously a Puerto Rican resource. I mean, if the government was getting those billions of dollars. But that's what you do. I mean, it's the same dynamic. I don't know. Did you watch The Sopranos?
No, sorry.
There was a storyline about a guy who owned a sporting goods store.
I've seen this far into it, actually.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah. The sporting goods, this is exactly the same situation. The guy has a problem. I think he had a problem with gambling or something like that. He spent some money. So they basically start inviting him to a poker game. And they take all his money. And then they say, whoa, we got money for you. But guess what? We get the rest of the store, too. And this dynamic, that is what we see time and time again. Doesn't take much to put particularly an occupied territory that does not have any sovereignty or any ability, autonomy, or any representation within the context of the U.S. government in any meaningful way. Doesn't take much to put them in a weakened position where they need to come to you for help. And then you say, oh, well, we'll pay for your highway. We get it. And that's the way the spiral starts. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program, wherein we will take your phone calls. We will take your IMs. We will talk about some stories. Folks, a reminder, it is your membership that makes this show possible. A lot of people, I don't know what's going on. It makes me a little bit nervous when I see this. But a lot of people have been running into some financial issues. I think there's also a general malaise in the country. But maybe I'm projecting. But if you're one of the people who have the financial means to support this program, please do become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. You support the free show. We give you some extra content. Show is commercial free. And soon, because we do have some members who complain they don't get to hear the ads and they don't get the deals. You know, like on Quip, electric toothbrush. People,
mine actually should arrive in the mail.
I got people actually complain to me about that. we're going to set up, the new website's going to roll out in the next couple of weeks, and we're going to set up an area where you can go and just check it so you don't have to hear it. But you'll be able to, you'll have access, easier access to it. Somebody asked me about ZipRecruiter the other day, too. All right. Also, JustCoffee.co-op, co-op, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. If you buy your crap from Amazon, buy it through our link. And do check out, just read about it, because it's just an interesting idea. BeautifulDayRI.org. BeautifulDayRI.org. If you like granola, it's a win-win. If you're not a granola person, just check out the model because it's pretty cool. All right, folks, see you in the fun half.